Begin after six taps. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Hi, thanks for listening to the FlixWise podcast. I'm your host, anorexic duck Lady P, no relation to Master P. And joining us today is a man who's always true to his fleece, FlixWise co-producer Mr. Martin Kessler.
Hello.
Yes, thank you. And please welcome back to the show the star of Marcus Pitt in the City, Mr. Marcus Pitt.
Hello, what's going on?
That might be my favorite intro of all time. Anyway, thanks for coming back, Marcus.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And also joining us today is FlixWise's art director, Miss Emma Gerard.
Hello, and RMU.
Her purpose on the show is usually just to be beautiful and affectionate, but today she has come with an even nobler goal, for she is here to explain to us and the listeners why Chris Noonan's 1995 feature, Babe, is one of the greatest films of all time. We've had one beloved children's classic denied entry into the FlixWise favorites list. Sorry, Watership Down. But let's find out if Babe, another tale featuring animal personification, makes the cut. Emma? I'm warning you, the stakes are high. If you can't convince us,
it's... I think they prefer to be cow and cows. Oh, I'm sorry.
That was awesome. The stakes are high. If you can't convince us, it's pork chops for dinner. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, round us up.
All right. Well, Babe, the movie begins a long time ago when pigs were afforded no respect except by other pigs. When Babe, the runt in a litter of large whites, is born in an intensive piggery. Babe and his mother are soon separated when she and the other sows are taken away to never return from what the pigs assume to be pig paradise. Babe is then chosen to be taken away to a fair in a farming community to be given away as the prize in a guess the pig's weight game for charity. Farmer Hoggett, a sheep farmer, reluctantly agrees to participate in the game, where he and Babe form an instant understanding, allowing Hoggett to correctly guess the pig's weight, and so Babe becomes a piece of livestock on Hoggett's farm. In the barn that night, one of the farmer's sheepdogs, Fly, hears Babe crying in grief for his mother, and a recent mother herself takes pity on Babe and convinces Rex, another sheepdog, and the father of her puppies to let her take care of Babe while he adjusts to life on the farm. In the morning, Babe begins to discover there's a distinct hierarchy of animals on Hoggett's farm, and the animals, including Ma, a sickly ewe that Babe befriends, encourage him to see that the way things are is the way things are. This is not as simple as it seems, as one of the farm's ducks, Ferdinand, is attempting to escape his fate as a Christmas roast by refusing to be fattened and attempting to adopt the role of a rooster. When Hoggett's wife buys a mechanical rooster to render Ferdinand obsolete, he recruits Babe in a failed heist through the forbidden farmhouse. Their master plan is thwarted by the house cat, and Ferdinand and Babe fall out of favor with the farmer and his wife, and Rex forbids Babe from associating with Ferdinand, who flies away on the lamb. No pun intended. The farmer's wife has her heart set on preparing their misbehaved pig for Christmas dinner, but Hoggett appeals to her ambition and convinces her to cook the duck instead while they fatten the pig for a later time. On Christmas, Ferdinand reappears, and it is revealed that his hen crush has taken his place on the dinner table, while sheep rustlers descend on the Hoggett farm. Babe, however, hears the cries of the sheep and alerts the farmer to their presence, which manages to save part of the herd and prove his worth to the farmer. Hoggett, curious about the pig's sensitivity to the sheep, takes Babe out with Rex and Fly the next day to work on the field, giving Babe a chance to herd the sheep. Babe discovers that he cannot control the sheep with force, as Fly instructs him to, but following Ma's advice, discovers that he can actually convince the sheep to cooperate with the farmer's instructions by means of negotiation. Rex is insulted by a pig playing his role, and the farmer's wife begins to question her husband's sanity. But Hoggett and Babe are both driven to share their dream that a pig can be a sheepdog to the farm, nay, the world.
Beautiful story, really.
Yeah.
All right, so Emma, you've been pushing us to do Babe for FlixWise Favorites entry probably since we started doing FlixWise Favorites. Tell me why you love Babe so much.
Well, Babe is one of my favorite children's movies, and I think a really cool thing in children's movies that interests me is that they're kind of exempt from a lot of expectations that other narrative movies that are supposedly just for adults are beholden to. So I think you can do really cool things with them, like introduce kind of subversive ideas and in a way that's not unpalatable to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think this is a really good example of how that works. It has a lot to, this movie has a lot to say about what being a member of society means and how society is related to economy and food and how animals are related to food.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, it's also, it's scary to think that being kind to one another is a subversive idea, but but in some ways, I think it is. Like, there are a lot of people who are very invested in upholding our current order. Mm-hmm. And this film is asking us to rethink that. But yeah, so I'll let's go around the horn here. Martin, do you like Babe?
Of course I do.
Of
How
course
could you not?
You do. You're not a monster.
People who have been listening to the podcast might have even heard me mention it more than once.
Really?
I think I probably even that. Yeah, like I think on the episode where we talked about films that made us cry, I might have thrown it in at the last minute, and I'm pretty sure I've at least quoted it once on the podcast. But I think it's one of those few children films that really holds up and still makes me laugh and makes me cry and entertains me and moves me and makes me even think about importance of an unprejudiced heart, I guess.
Yeah.
So I think it's a wonderful film.
Absolutely. Marcus, how about you?
Absolutely. And, you know, I also have to throw in, I guess the older I get, because I enjoy Babe, I don't consider it, you know, quote, like a children's movie. Mm-hmm. It's more to me like a family film, but like a true family film. And the older I get, the more I've been trying to explore those kinds of movies, because a lot of times movies that get called family movies are really just children's movies, or they're just movies that adults can kind of tolerate. But this is really a movie that can kind of, you know, be enjoyed by every age. Mm-hmm. So that's why I consider it more, you know, a family movie, because a family consists of many different ages. I it's more than just a children's mm-hmm. movie to me, because when I was 13, I enjoyed it. I'm 34 now, so it's like, I still enjoyed it. It's one of the small handful of, like, true family films, in my opinion, that, you know, can be, that transcends age and all that stuff. So that just for that fact alone is really why I love it so much.
All right. So let's talk about that a little bit more. What is the distinction between a children's film and a family film? Is it just a level of sophistication?
No, it's not even. It's just if it's... Maybe. I guess it depends on the movie. But for me, it's kind of like subject matter. Like, if it's mm-hmm. just kind of silly, simply sing along, you know, whatever. Like, if I'm an adult, I can't really relate to that too much. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I just think a family movie is something that it just addresses. It's something across the board. It just has something for every age group, you know? And I think, and obviously Babe has that, in my opinion, so.
It's kind of funny, like, a lot of films that are advertised as, like, working for children and adults are sort of mostly children's films, and then sort of lazily put in jokes that only adults will get, and then you say, well, like, adults will be able to follow along. I feel like this film as a whole functions in a way that lets you appreciate and engage with the story.
Absolutely. There's no winking at the camera.
Totally.
It asks you to invest in the story, no matter your age. Oftentimes, so-called family movies are just children's movies with a few winking nods to the adults in the audience, with references to other things that children obviously will not get. So there's like very clear divide between the stuff in the movie that's meant for the children and the stuff that's meant for the parents, whereas Babe does a great job just like appealing to everybody.
There might be a kind of arbitrary degree to which these labels apply to, because I think sometimes when people say children's movies, it just means like a movie that is just sloppily made with the excuse that it's made for children.
Yeah. Get away with a lot.
Well, sloppily, I don't know about, I just think, again, like, I'm not sure about sloppily, just more like, I immediately think when I think children's movie, just like a cartoon musical, basically.
Yeah. I don't mean like most like children's movies that you probably see on like in the theater on Netflix. I really mean like more of the like straight to like video kind of like.
Absolutely.
Stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a huge market for that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just cannot have enough.
Which sucks for kids, because I think that children are totally capable of comprehending complex narrative stuff.
Absolutely.
Like, that's why you have like all these adults freaking out about like shows on Cartoon Network and getting really into them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk about some of the parts of this movie that might fly over children's heads. I mean, I get the story is pretty, it's laid out in a very simple way. And I don't mean simplistic. I mean, it's just very, it's very, and it doesn't, like, there's no pretenses. There's just, like, this is the way the world is. And it can be horrible. And I think children understand that. And there's something, like, so horrific about the image of a mechanical udder. I mean, that's truly the stuff of nightmares, right? And it's not, there's no very little carnage, but it's actually probably, to me, the most terrifying image in the movie. Hmm. I mean, as an adult, you watch it and you go, this movie has a lot of things to say about patriarchy and about capitalism, and it really holds up to a much deeper and closer reading. And I don't know, Emma, whenever we talk about this movie, it's always like, let's use it as an excuse to talk about Marxism.
Yeah.
But so should we delve into that?
Yeah, well, okay. I think the mechanical udder at the beginning really kind of sets it up, because it's about the replacement of, like, personal connections with these larger industrial machines, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think part of the strength of this movie is that it isn't all just, like, animal metaphor either. Like, this isn't Animal Farm. It's, right. like, about how actual animals actually do participate in society, mm-hmm. and how our need to keep animals not only as food, but also as part of our lives has kind of implicated them into our social structures. Mm-hmm. And that the way that we treat each other as people is, like, reflected in the way that we treat animals.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's not, it doesn't function as, like, pure allegory.
Yeah.
It's a very literal.
Yeah, on some level it does, because yeah. I mean, like, I don't think animals do, like, have a common language that yeah. they use to, you know, interact with each other like they do in the movie.
Yeah, but... yeah.
You do have that really strict hierarchy that Babe's introduced to, like, the, like, when the dogs first see Babe, the puppies ask, what is that? And the mom explains, Fly explains, like, oh, the pigs are for eating, the boss only eats stupid animals like ducks and chickens, mm-hmm. pigs are not as smart as dogs, but they're smarter than ducks and sheep. Like, you already get an idea of where Babe fits into that society, and
right,
like, it does establish, you know, in a true to life sort of way, that there is this kind of hierarchy in our association with animals based on what we feel it's okay to eat, and mm-hmm. what their role might be in their service to us.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, yeah. About, I don't know, 9 years ago, I revisited Babe for the first time since the first time I saw it when it came out in theaters. And, like, what he said, the whole hierarchy of animals, saying, like, it's okay to eat this, like, you don't eat that. It reminded me of when I went to go see Michael Haneke's Cachet. No, it wasn't Haneke's Cachet. It was his film Time of the Wolf. And there's a scene where a horse is really killed, you know, in the movie, and it caused a lot of uproar. But I felt like, you know, the same people who are upset at a horse being killed on film, like, would still eat a hamburger or a chicken sandwich. You know, it brings up this kind of weird, you know, mm-hmm. like, what animals you care about, what animals you don't care about, which is really strange. It's about, I don't know whether it's size, status, whatever. But I knew specifically certain friends who were so disturbed by the horse getting killed, as they should, are the mm-hmm. same friends who I would eat, you know, McDonald's with,
yeah,
and whatnot,
exactly,
and it's
yeah.
like, what, huh, you know what I mean, like,
yeah, but it's a really horse, Martin.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah, oh, this might be overly specific, but I was reading a really interesting book, if I can find the name of it. I think it was called Food and Love by, shoot, he's a famous sociologist, I can't remember. Anyway, the point of was that apparently horse meat has, like, definitely come in and out of vogue, and it's really related to how much people are into French food at the time.
Mm.
So, like, it was really cool in the 70s to eat horse, but now if you are running an IKEA in England, like, you don't want that in your meatballs. But, yeah.
Yeah, and it is kind of arbitrary. Like, why not horses? Why cows and not horses?
Well, that reminds me of, I don't know if you remembered, John C. Reilly walked off the set of Manderley. He was originally in Manderley, huh. But there's the whole thing with the donkey. And he left because he's a big, like, animal rights guy. And he did, what's that movie with him and Molly Shannon and Laura Dern? About the dogs.
Oh, is it Must Love Dogs?
Yeah. So you know, he was in that movie as well. So he's a big animal lover, but at the same time, you know, John C. Reilly was in The Lobster recently. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but The Lobster.
Not yet.
The way animal, like, there's every type of animal in that movie, and I don't know if they were all treated the right way. So it just seemed, I don't want to go out all say, you know, John C. Reilly's being hypocritical, but the way the animals are treated in The Lobster aren't that, you know, different than, say, Manderley or something. So again, it just goes back to that kind of, you know, hypocrisy, hierarchy, contradictory way of thinking where it's like, why does this animal matter more than that? I don't know. So
yeah, and I don't think this movie is necessarily like a call to like vegetarianism either. I just think it's asking to think more about how we regard one another as humans and also to regard animals. Like,
sure.
It's all about assumptions and like, like we just assume that it's cool to eat a chicken. And I'm not saying it's wrong to eat a chicken, but the movie, I think, would want you to question why.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely, yeah. I guess James Cromwell became a vegetarian after doing this movie.
Oh, no, I thought he was a vegetarian before, but like he became a vegan. Yeah, he became a vegan, yeah.
I mean, it
plants
can...
Plants have souls.
yeah, why do we just eat plants all willy-nilly?
Oh, true. Man, like, Veggie Tales, that we can categorize, I think, as children's movies, right?
But that being said, Emma, I mean, you mentioned, like, it's not necessarily a call to vegetarianism. It's not overly didactic in that way. Like, why? What are you doing? Why are you eating these adorable creatures? But do we think of it as a message movie? I don't, but... Could it be construed that way?
I don't either, like, because I think all that kind of sentiment is more related to the themes of the movie. Mm-hmm. And it's about how, as, I don't know, well, I mean, all of us here in the room, at least, are city dwellers, and the population of the world increasingly is in the current age. And by definition, people that live in the city are people who can't provide their own food, mm-hmm. and it comes from somewhere. And, you know, so we're all like the little girl who comes and visits and doesn't. What is
she wants the one she saw on TV. She wants the house she saw on TV.
Oh, I know. Also,
Brattiest grandchildren.
Yeah. It is interesting how in children's movies and family movies, often children are the worst characters.
Oh my god. Another example. I like the toy, specifically Toy Story 3, but like in the Toy Story movies, a lot of the kids are just demonic, like.
Yes.
You know, some are good. Some of the kids are good, but at the same time, it's just like, oh my goodness, they're just these like awful, you know, beings.
Yeah. 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 Pixar, you know, the little girl in Finding Nemo and. Yeah. Yeah, but I don't know what that's about.
Which is strange. Exactly.
Still make her secretly hate children. Possibly.
It's strange. You would think you'd want to make the children characters like more relatable and realistic in a family movie, and not these like weird, you know, archetype, whatever, you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that's about.
Yeah.
I feel like when you're looking at a kid in a movie, sometimes it's like when you're looking at a crowd. Like, I feel like it's a little bit of a substitute for, like, the viewer.
Mm-hmm. You think, so it's an audience surrogate? But they're such, they seem like kind of evil straw men characters.
Yeah, that like, too.
They're the worst of humanity. It's our basest impulses. They're narcissistic, and that's just a part of... You know, growing up is realizing that other people have feelings, you know?
Or even, like, the other movies that, like, more, like, live-action true family movies. I, you know, some people debate me on this, but take, like a Pee-wee's Big Adventure or Neverending Story. Those also have, like, kid characters that are, like, Jesus, like the bullies in Neverending Story who just keep, you know, put them in the trash. Mm-hmm. Or in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, there's that scene towards the end, like, one of the only little kids in that movie, I consider that a family movie, is that kid actor, you know, Jason Hervey from Wonder Years, who's like, when the camera's not rolling, he's this like evil, you know, like, does it look like I'm ready? I was born ready! Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So,
but I was thinking of like Monster Squad, how like the kids are just like assholes to each other. And that's kind of what it's like to be a kid sometimes.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
sometimes. Absolutely. Yeah.
Kids are total assholes. Absolutely. Yeah. That's yeah. I mean, that's kind of the thing. Like, maybe I appreciate that children are often depicted as little monsters because. And maybe it's because children aren't sentimental about other children.
No, like when you see a character that's meant to be like the surrogate for you, like when you watch Star Wars Phantom Menace and you have the little Anakin Skywalker, like how unrelatable was he as a kid?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. we know, children understand that other children are awful.
I just had to Google the last line of Peter Pan, the book, not the play, by J.M. Barrie.
Yeah.
It's, when Margaret grows up, she will have a daughter who is to be Peter's mother in turn, and thus it will go on so long as children are gay and innocent and heartless.
That's great.
Whoa.
So, back to Babe. We talked about how the film is not sentimental about the way it depicts children, but... it is kind of sentimental about this kind of agrarian, down-on-the-farm lifestyle and kind of an old-fashioned way of life. At least that's kind of how I looked at it. It's sort of everything seems drenched in this kind of gorgeous, golden, sepia-toned just loveliness. Mm-hmm. And, like, obviously it works for the film, but it's also kind of strange seeing as how... it's not sentimental about anything else, you know?
Well, I think, like, there is sort of an element of breaking tradition, you know, the when they talk about the Christmas traditions, and Christmas means carnage, and all the, like, the hierarchy, the traditions on the farm, the film is sort of suggesting that they'd be broken, and even stuff like the fax machine that's given as a gift, which seems like a total joke.
Yeah.
That's what you see the farmer using to send the registration for Babe. So I think, in some ways, like, it is a very idealized... portrait of this agrarian life, but you know, it shows hardship with the sheep being stolen or killed, and I think it's suggesting that maybe it's not a perfect way of life either.
Yeah,
that's what I was gonna jump in and say. Even I remember, you know, back in my teens watching this movie and thinking like there's a thin layer of, not, I don't know about poking fun at that way of life, but noting that it is a little dated, just like, because like from what you were saying, like it's so colorful, it's almost like there's a fakeness to it, and to me that fakeness translated like this way of life is, I don't want to say backwards, because I mean if you want to like on a farm and that, like there's not absolutely nothing wrong with that, but certain old fashioned ways of thinking are dated and, you know, kind of should be put to bed. And I think the film was kind of just the way that the look of the film, I think that it was kind of, you know, challenging that. I don't think it was really romanticizing it, or maybe it was, but at the same time, it was also lightly criticizing it too. I don't think it's like one clear way.
I mean, it sort of reminds me of like the way a Jean-Pierre Jeunet film is shot. Like,
caricaturized.
Like it's slightly cartoony. So like, certain elements are very beautiful, but it also has like a little bit of a goofier, cartoony quality to it.
Yeah,
you know?
City of Lost Children, City of Lost Children, Delicatessen, all that stuff. Yeah. It's a mixture of both. Yeah,
absolutely.
This would be a good double bill with Delicatessen.
It really would. Yes.
Sure. Oh my God, Jesus.
The toy pig that's like reveals like a sauce, like a bunch of sausages at the beginning, like feels exactly like Delicatessen.
Yes,
that's the titles to me.
Yes.
But also, I feel like the look of the movie is partly related to like the way it's supposed to be kind of like everywhere and nowhere in the movie, which is emphasized a lot more in the second movie.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And should we talk about the second movie?
I was going over the stuff that you wanted to touch on. I feel so alone because your note about saying, you know, like how some people consider Babe, Pig in the City better. That was news to me a few days ago when I first read that. I honestly, from when I came up, I thought Babe 2 was for the most part considered a joke, or not a joke, but just like not the same as the first Babe. That this was all news to me, so I was doing a bit of reading up on the second one because
Did you end up watching it?
No, I didn't. I didn't, unfortunately, no.
Yeah, I mean, I recommend watching it. It's fascinating. It really does feel like a Jeunet movie, like that one especially. Yeah. That really does feel like Delicatessen. it's also terrifying.
It is terrifying.
Okay. I mean, truly, I was watching it going like, is this, this is like Bresson meets Fellini meets a little bit of Tennessee Williams.
Wow. Stylistically, it's so bold and it's so frantic. Like, I think Margaret Sixel, who also edited Mad Max Fury Road, edited Babe, Pig in the City, and you could really tell.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, you know, you look at the chase scenes, mm-hmm. or really any scene, it has this kind of energy that's going in conjunction with the camera movements that's I don't know, it's really wild, I think.
Yes.
And yes. I don't know, like, I kind of like how it is a little bit darker, and even moments of joy are kind of laced with melancholy. You have like good intentions not always rewarded, sometimes bad things come out of good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know maybe why it was a little bit more divisive, in that like it just goes in such an extreme direction, you're either going to connect with it much more strongly or not at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's yeah. very you know, like, I think maybe people could at least appreciate the level of craft that went into it, but like its sense of humor, its sense of tragedy, it's quite specific, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I can understand why people might have been turned off by that. And I think too, like, it came out 2 or 3 years after the first film. That was sort of like the age where a lot of these kind of cash-in sequels were coming out.
Yes.
That's why I disregarded it. Like, I
think a lot of people just disregarded it outright because of that, even though I think, like, it reflects, like, so much care and creativity. Like, mm-hmm. I kind of think it might be, like, George Miller's best film, actually.
Yeah, a lot of people say that, yeah.
Like, as much as I love Road Warrior and Witches of Eastwick and Mad Max Fury Road, I think I might have even said to you before that on one level it kind of like bothered me that the finale of Mad Max just was like, all right, we're gonna just be violent until everything is right.
Yeah.
Let's kill enough people. Like, I think, you know, the nature of Babe, like the way it reflects George Miller's personality as like a doctor and maybe somebody who looks for more creative and gentle solutions for resolving these mm-hmm. kind of problems, issues.
Yeah.
Like, I think just I find Babe, Pig in the City and Babe a little bit more satisfying than mm-hmm.
yes.
Mad Max Fury Road.
Yes, but we should have prefaced this whole topic by saying that George Miller co-wrote and produced Babe, and he co-wrote, directed, and produced Babe, Pig in the City. However, he is not the official director on the first movie.
But like, you can definitely feel his presence throughout. Like, I was thinking how many shots, like when those cars are coming in to steal the sheep, it looks mm-hmm. like something out of Road Warrior. Like when
yes.
the fireworks are going and you have the gap-tooth kids looking at it, it looks just like a shot in Mad Max Fury Road when the guy gets his eyes shot out and he's trying to see a flare. Like, it's visually, yeah. Technically, like it is, even though it's not directed by George Miller, it's almost like a George Miller film in the way that maybe like Empire Strikes Back, you can say, is a George Lucas film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't direct it, but like his presence is definitely
exactly
felt throughout. Though you can see, like, just looking at Babe, Pig in the City, like maybe why George Miller chose not to direct Babe, or what the differences might have been if he had taken the directorial position for the first film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I happen to prefer the first movie because I think it is more tonally cohesive. The Babe, Pig in the City takes a sharp left turn at about the 2/3 mark where it just becomes an extended fat joke. At least that's how I interpreted it. It is very strange, that last act. And I don't really like the way it punishes Mrs. Hoggett. I don't know.
I kind of like that she has a larger role. I think the actress Magda Szubanski.
Yeah.
Because I think she's actually like quite an effective comedic performer, and I like that she's a little bit more front and center and gets to sort of be more part of the joke than sort of off to the sidelines smiling. Or like, I think she can actually handle those. I mean, I don't think of it as a fat joke, really. It's like you know, it's a little bit ridiculous, her running around trying to find Babe and being on the motorcycle and stuff. But I think she's just a
Comic. Lovely.
I definitely think she's lovely. Actress who plays the landlady in Babe, Pig in the City.
Like, yeah,
the two of them together. Like, I would watch another film with just those two actresses.
I'm surprised, what's his name? Wiener Dog hasn't hired her.
Oh, Todd Solondz.
Yeah, she looks like a Todd Solondz character.
Oh.
Right? Like, it didn't really tickle my funny bone, I guess. Like, I mean, you know, if you thought it was funny, then that's cool. The darkness in Babe, Pig in the City is so, like, I really felt massively depressed after watching it.
Like, even, like, the end when things are supposed to be going back to normal, it's like, well, they're not, it's not quite back to normal. Yeah. Or some things have been lost, or, oh, you know what really gets me is, like, the dog in the wheelie,
yeah,
wheelchair thing, you know, when, like, he almost dies and yeah. he's gonna jump off and he can finally walk again, but he gets called back by Babe.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, there are some, like, really remarkable moments too, I think, mm-hmm. like when he's being chased by that
the bull terrier
yeah. and, like, Babe just turns around and asks why? Like,
why?
I know. Oh my god, so sad. And then, like, the bull terrier's drowning that was just chasing Babe, and Babe, because he's so decent and good, just turns around and goes back to rescue him.
I know. God,
I mean, that's moving stuff. I think, like, you know, maybe it's not for everyone, but I think that's kind of what makes it special is mm-hmm. that it's not for everyone.
Yeah,
Big in the City.
I don't know. That poodle was really, like, that's some grown up stuff. That was messed up.
So I mean, on one hand, I'd be far less likely to recommend Babe, Pig in the City, but I also think, like, it's a more than adequate sequel.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I did want to just touch on two more things, the special effects and the voice work. I forget the actress's name, Elizabeth something, is the voice of Babe. And Elizabeth is a female name, typically. So I wonder do you associate Babe with femininity or masculinity, or is it kind of just asexual, or kind of just without gender? Do you ever think about that?
I just think that's kind of a loaded question, because so much of this movie is about, like, our assumptions about what roles are and what has worth and what doesn't.
Right.
And, like, this movie's full of characters who are assumed to be one thing and are another thing.
Yeah.
Though, random fact, Babe is referred to as male throughout the movie, but they had to use only female piglets because they didn't want to show pig balls.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess that he is referred to as he, but perhaps we should be questioning that. There's it's a feminine voice. It's sort of hard to pin down. Maybe it's not not one or the other. Maybe that question is meant to be ambiguous.
When I knew who Christine Cavanaugh was when Babe came out, because she also acts too.
Oh,
she
is that her name?
She didn't just Kavanaugh? Do she didn't just do voiceover work. She also acted, so I knew. And half of her voice role, like, that's close to what her normal voice was. So it's like, as a kid, it was a little confused. I was like, this is a woman doing a man's voice, and, you know, again, I didn't have the whatever intelligence that I had now, or the way of thought that I had then. So it was a little, it was like, this is clearly a woman doing a boy's, you know, voice. But then the older I got, you know, it's like, she was the voice of Dexter. Dexter was a little, you know, Dexter's Laboratory. Mm-hmm. Dexter was a boy. So I was able to accept more, and just the fact that, like, her voice can just be very ambiguous, like a cute kind of ambiguous thing. So just the older I got, the more I was able to accept it, and just kind of, like, now I don't even think about it, like, just because they call Babe refer to Babe as a male, I think of it as a male now. So
yeah.
But
and then the other thing was the special effects. I think they're really remarkable. Mm-hmm. They really did
especially for the
job.
Time yeah especially yeah. for the time.
Although, like, it did sort of open the floodgates for a lot of these, like, talking animal, talking baby type movies.
True.
That it was sort of lazy in how they use the same effect.
Yes. They're creepy, but this one avoids falling into that uncanny valley, for the most part.
Probably because it was a new technology at that time, they had to use it sparingly and, you know, were really considerate of how it's used. Because you see, in conjunction with the real animals, with the puppets, with the editing, like, it's, you don't actually get that much of it. And when it is there, like, I think they must have been absolutely certain that it would work.
Yeah,
you know, so it's quite a technical accomplishment.
Yeah,
I was thinking too, like, how much of the for anyone who is interested in editing, like, this is kind of a great example of seeing the Kuleshov effect, where you, like, I mean, people know the experiment where you cut from the person to, like, a bowl of soup and it makes them look hungry. And I was thinking how, like, the editing, there's a lot of, like, cutting from the mother dog's face to the puppies being taken away, and it makes it, like, the saddest thing.
Yes.
You know, and, yes, like, it's a great example of, like, how you can shape a performance out of an animal actor, because, you know, they're not really acting, you know, and it's really effective, I think, the film, how the special effects and how everything came together to convey the emotions of these animals.
Yes, it's true. And also, all actors are sheep, right? So it's very literal in this movie. but nevertheless, they do good work, those cattle and the livestock. All right, well, that seems like a good place to leave it. Let's go around and say our final words. Emma, I know you presented this to us, but I will ask you anyway. Do you think Babe is worthy of a spot on the FlixWise favorites list?
Yes, I stand true to that assertion.
Martin, I don't know. You saw Babe or Babe, Pig in the City. It's not too late.
Well, I gotta go with Babe, if only because I think it's, like, the rare example of a 90s family movie that, like, really does hold up over time and really can be enjoyed by basically anyone. Mm-hmm. So I think it's an actual classic.
Yes. We do a lot of those on this show. It's a lot of 90s family movies. Marcus, Babe, yes, one of the greatest movies of all time.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, all right, perfect. I agree. So let's... Shall we give a cheer? All right.
Yay!
Bye.
La la la.
La la la. And that's the way we frame it. FlixWise, that is. Listeners, are you Team Babe or are you Team Babe Pig in the City? Come let us know on our website, FlixWise.com. And you can also like us and leave us a comment on Facebook at facebook.com/FlixWise. And if you want to talk to me about your favorite children's movies, you can find me on Twitter. The handle is @FlixWise. But wait, you mean to tell me you did all that before going to iTunes, rating us and leaving us a nice comment? That'll not do, Pig! Seriously, before you do all the social media stuff, please tell our masters at Apple how much you like the show and what good jobs we're doing. On our next show, we're back to the Sight and Sound list. We are officially in our 50s. We have Charlie Chaplin's City Lights, Kenji Mizoguchi's Ugetsu, and Chris Marker's La Jetée coming up.
Nice.
Not sure about that order, but check social media for updates. Until then, Marcus, thanks so much for coming on the show again.
Anytime. Thank you for having me.
All right, and you can be found at...
At @Pinland_Empire on Twitter, and more importantly, PinlandEmpire.com. That's my site where I'm always writing, always listening, comparing movie images, and you can also go to ThePinkSmoke.com, which is another site that I'm a regular contributor to. We've got a lot of great stuff going on there, so @Pinland_Empire at Twitter, PinkSmoke, ThePinkSmoke.com, and PinlandEmpire.com. Check all those places out.
Wait, Martin...
Lady P.
Pleasure as always.
Pleasure as always. And if people want to find me, I'll be at Pig Paradise.
Yes. Emma, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh. I have to shout out Lissy Russell. I was hanging out with her last night. She's the wife of the late Ken Russell. And wow. I mentioned that I was doing this podcast, and she got so excited. And she shared She shared a really cool story about how much her mother loved this movie and how much she loves this movie, so I have to give her a shout out. She's gonna be listening. And awesome. she's always so supportive, and she truly, truly loves movies. She loves film. And yeah, I wish you guys could have seen how excited she got when I mentioned that I was
Lissy.
Doing this yesterday. Yeah, so shout out to Lissy. Yeah.
Hope
yay.
You yeah. Thanks for listening.
She's great.
All right. Well, I need to let's end this thing. Yeah. Emma, pass the seitan.